This is Wildcat Dojo Conversations.
Welcome to episode number 199. It really should be 200, but Sensei doesn't like milestone numbers. So we're going to do this one at 199.
And we're the Three Musketeers here today. I'm Sensei Michelle.
I'm Sensei Jackie.
And I'm Landon.
Well, all of you have been listening to us for almost 4 years now.
Can't believe it.
And we have done so many interviews in that time, but we never interviewed the woman who made it all possible, Sensei Michelle Darbra. And I believe that since she is a woman who has such respect, not only for karate, but for the people that she herself has interviewed, that it was about time that we interviewed our own ninth Dan, Sensei Michelle.
And I just want to go on record as saying, I thought it was weird then, and it feels weird right this minute, but I'm trying to stay strong.
You're in the hot seat. You're in the hot seat.
I am in the hot seat. I'm not into it, but I agreed to do it. So here we go.
So I want to start back in the beginning. Very, very good place to start.
That's typically where you begin.
I've been with you almost 30 years, you know, my entire adult life. And we have shared a lot of stories, but honestly, I'm not sure where you were born or all the interesting places you've lived.
Okay, I'll say that. I was not born in Florida, even though I think most people consider me a Floridian because I've been here my entire life. I was born in North Carolina, and my parents moved first to Cocoa and then down to Fort Lauderdale when I was very young, less than 3 years old, I would say.
Oh.
Yes. So I've been here all my life.
Wow. In what towns did you live in South Florida?
Oh, my goodness. You mean right here in Broward?
Right.
I've lived in Davie, Fort Lauderdale. I live in Fort Lauderdale now. I think that's it. I don't think I ever lived in Plantation or Sunrise or Miami or any of those.
And
how about you guys?
Nope.
Not that I know.
I'm a proud Davie boy, I guess.
And I lived in North Miami Beach for a while.
No. We interrupted you, Landon. Go.
No, I said I'm a proud Davie boy.
Ah, very nice.
And when did you start training in karate?
So I'll start with this. I was not a physically active child at all.
That is hard to believe.
I know. I agree with that. It is hard to believe knowing me now. But let me ask you guys if this is true for you. I'm actually going to ask Sensei Jackie because we already know your high school life, Landon. When you were in high school, did you have your own version of balancing exercise and diet to be part of your peer group?
I was in high school in two different places, in Central Florida and in Labrador. And it was so different being in a warm climate and a very cold climate. I was a cheerleader. I was, I did all of those things in high school. And as far as diet goes, I ate what my parents put on the table.
Now, see, this may be why I was never an active teenager, Landon, because when I was in seventh grade, which was the beginning of junior high, which was middle school at that time, I didn't make the cheerleading team. So maybe I got an attitude at that point and just shuffled the whole thing out of my head.
That's and then she took out all her aggression in karate.
So now I'm between the age of, say, 19 and 22, and I'm looking at my life and thinking I'd like to be doing something different than what I'm doing. My job was okay, but the rest of my life was not. And so I started taking community classes. Not community college classes, just community school classes.
Right.
And so I ended up in a gymnastics class, and the gymnastics teacher was also an Aikido teacher. And the Aikido teacher said, Michelle, I know you're going to love this class. So he put me in it. And after only 6 weeks or maybe 8 weeks, a couple of months, he said to me, I have to go away for a while, but somebody else is going to come in and take my place. And the person who came in and took his place was Master Collegian.
Wow.
Definitely not an Aikido person.
No. And, you know, his name was Al. And I say him by his first name because he did not call himself by any moniker.
Oh, he didn't?
No, he didn't call himself sensei or anything. And we wore the same things we wore to take gymnastics, just shorts and t-shirts. And he just worked out. It wasn't super formal like karate was. So when I walked in and saw Master Collegian in a black uniform, I was like, whoa, this may be more than I can do.
And when you started karate, you were working at the leather shop, right, Sensei?
Correct. And I worked at the leather shop full time for like 20 years.
Wow.
Yes.
And did karate at night?
Us. At that time, we trained on Mondays and Wednesdays. But we did a lot of other things. We did weekends. We did demos. We were together 4 to 6 times a week.
About how many people were in those beginning classes?
Well, when I walked into that first class after Al left and Master Collegian took over, there were 6 people in the room, 5 of which I still stay in touch with.
Wow.
And none of us was in a uniform. But I'll give a shout out to Sensei Iannelli, Sensei Rich Iannelli, because he was Master Collegian's helper that night.
Was he a black belt yet?
No. But the two of them were so intimidating. You can imagine it. I can actually see that.
When you look back in the day, I guess, but when you look back at those days, do you have like distinct memories? Do you kind of remember being really happy, learning a lot? What can you remember from your beginning experience and beginning months?
I think that my karate experience is quite different from a lot of people's experience because I met Master Collegian in 1979 and we were together until he was no longer here. So it was a very long time.
That's almost unheard of today.
I think so. So that's a memory for me that we stuck it out through thick and through thin. And the memories that I have that really stick out in my mind are the ones where I got in trouble. Those don't make great stories now, do they?
Wonderful stories.
But most people tell stories about like traveling with Sensei. You'll hear those on the podcast when we do Master Collegian stories. And those are also great memories when people travel together. But I think one of the big stories that I really like is that the very first day we met, he sat us all down and he put gloves on us one at a time. And we were going to spar the very first night we ever met. None of us had ever been in karate before. And he didn't explain what was sparring.
Ah, this sounds like it's going to go really well.
And then he made me go first. I know. I said, oh, my God. Like, I thought I was actually going to faint. I'm not even exaggerating at all. My air was all up in my throat. I can feel it happening right now, how it felt that day. So I stood up in front of him. We did the courtesy bow because we had gone over that already. And I looked him square in the face and I said, you're going to kill me, aren't you? And he goes, which is a sentence he repeated 1,000 times in our time together. He pushed against my shoulder and he goes, cut it out, honey. Like I was making a joke, only I wasn't making a joke. And of course, he didn't kill me. He was very kind. He did it the way we still do it today, where we start out with letting them hit, getting all that figured out, and pushed on to his method of teaching blocking, which was to smack you in the head and then say, put your hands up now. So it went well, and I lived through it.
Well, at that time, did most people start their own school? Most students?
You mean when I was a black belt?
By the time you had gone through your 2 years and then up to black belt.
So at that time, everybody who was a brown belt was pretty serious. There was only a few of us. We were a very small, homogenous group of people. Homogenous only in the fact that we all loved karate. We each had our own jobs that were different from each other's, and we each were different ages. One of the ladies that I stay in touch with now is 10 years my junior, and I've still stayed in touch with her all these years. She was like 15 when I met her. Yeah.
Amazing.
Wow. Yes. So the brown belts were helpers. They were helper teachers, and we wouldn't just help in Master Collegian's dojo. We would help in other people's dojos with other people's things. So we got used to working. So it wasn't at all an unusual occurrence for you to start your own dojo. Another thing that was going on at that time, it wasn't really hard to find a place where somebody would want you. My first dojo was in Davie at a little park called Berman Park.
Yes.
The building was probably the size of somebody's living room. We spent most of our time outdoors, and my class was on Saturday mornings. We only got it once a week for a while. Then I got to go to 2 times a week. Huh? Monday nights and Saturday mornings were what they gave us.
So I'm going to assume that when you started teaching, you taught what you had learned.
Yes.
Whatever Master Collegian taught you, you taught to the newer students.
Yes.
But as time went on and you became a master teacher, you changed some things to be taught your way. How did that evolution come within you?
So I'm going to throw that question back to you guys and say, I don't think that's an unusual thing at all.
I don't either.
Master Collegian used to say to me, Goju is the system, but you are the style. So everybody brings their own voice.
Yes.
to a conversation. If the three of us are teaching hard blocking system and one of us likes to do it in mirror image, the other one likes to have the child or the adult adapt to my left is over there on you, and the other person likes to turn around with their back to the student to show the blocks, all three methods are methods. Everybody just has to do the one that they find the most success with, right?
That's right.
If one person likes the brand new student to learn to say a nice strong itch, which means one, or they're putting their hand up over their head and another person doesn't want them to speak, but just wants them to breathe out, and another person wants to have them speak in English. Those are all good methods. You just have to figure out what works for you. The truth of the matter is, I learned hard blocking system on my first day of karate. I remember sitting in my car and writing down all the blocks. When we get to the notes episode, I hope I can find that note. I'm going to look. I'm looking now to see what all notes I have. But I have no idea if he spoke in English, Japanese, or numbered them at all. I have no idea. And over time, I've just kind of found things that I like. For example, there's this block in the hard blocking system, number 7, where you start your left arm on your left side and it swings across. So it's called an outside block, but it comes across the body. Correct. When I teach that block, I like to immediately show it in a bunk eye situation, in a situation where they can see the practicality of it. Because it's odd.
Us. That's right. It doesn't make sense.
That's right. And then right away, they're like, oh, this is so cool. You can add this at the end of it. And then everybody's a little excited. But I don't remember that happening to me, which doesn't mean it didn't happen, because we all know that we remember what we remember, right?
Yes, we do. Okay. I want to move us on just a little bit here, because we are making a podcast and we should talk about this. What in the world made you want to start this podcast?
So both Landon and Jackie were in my life when this whole amalgam took place. I have no idea how long ago it was, but I know what school we were in, and the school's been closed down for maybe 8 years.
Yes.
So it was a long time ago when we sat at Pine Island. And I was talking about how it would be nice if we, in our little dojo, could tape the conversations we sometimes have so that people who weren't with us but wish they were could listen. And then they could feel like they were part of the group. And we tried a few things. Do you guys remember that?
I do. The cassette recorder.
Yeah,
I totally remember.
We did some cassette stuff and we tried a few different things, but nothing really ever took. I guess it was about 4.5 years ago, because I spent 6 months on research before I ever did any recording. And I said to myself, I wonder if this is something that would work, that I could make work. And I did the research. I found some guy and he gave some free things on YouTube and I watched a bunch of them, made a bunch of notes. I believe, Landon, that you and myself and Jackie, we did a couple of little prototypes just to see if we could
pull
it off.
We did. We did. And we can look back now and say that they were kind of a mess.
Yes, but even our first episodes are a little bit of a mess. They're just a little rough. Let me give a shout out to Buzzsprout as our podcast host, and then we can tag them. She went modern. Since we've been with them, they started a cleaning. They'll clean the audio for me as part of a pay program. And when I listen to our first ones, you can hear that they are not mastered that way. They're still a little rough in the sound, even though we cleaned them as much as we could. And by me, I mean you. Yes, because I'm the editor in chief.
I want to jump in here for a minute and make sure that everyone is aware that Sensei sits every week for 6 to 8 hours. And
well, luckily we got it down to about a maximum 6-4, but way more than most people should.
And we'll edit every single one of the 200 episodes that we've done and make sure that every single sound, every single 2-second weird gap in between words sounds right. Make sure that the air in between words, I mean, she has a clean air file to put in between words. So I just want to give her a shout out, self-taught, that we are not edited by some fancy contractor that comes in, but Sensei could start that business.
And she could start the business of writing scripts.
Yes. And
okay, stop, both of you. I want to add on to the air thing. I do have a little file of clean air if I need it. But I found over time that if I take the air out of the recording we're in and drop it in the spots where there's big plane noise or gashes or whatever, it's a smoother line. Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
Yeah. The more you know. So I know that you love putting in your little clean air moments to make sure that the that the line is perfectly straight and make sure that we sound very good. I don't know, maybe that's your favorite part of the podcast, but is there another, you know, favorite moment, favorite experience that you've had from the podcast that you want to share?
So I want to start by saying this. When I first started karate, I had no idea that I was going to end up being a lifelong full-time karate person. I could not have thought that less. And I used to have a really smart, and by smart, I mean financially smart, relative who was much older than I was at the time. She was my aunt. And she used to say to me, "Why do you waste your time in that karate?" And I used to say to her, "I don't know, but I do know that's where I belong." And when I started doing the podcast, the same thing ended up being true. So we make no money out of this. In fact, we don't even break even yet. So there's a shameless plug to support us.
Look down in the show notes and there's a support line.
That's true. But from the first time we started, I said, this is awesome. Even the difficult times, which are always caused by time crunches.
Right.
Always. That's when it's difficult, when you have a time crunch on you. Now I'll get to the answer to your question. It's so exciting. It's exciting to meet new people. And you guys have to admit I'm right on that.
Oh, definitely.
Have Absolutely. We met some awesome people?
Awesome.
Us.
Awesome. I know.
People we would have never, ever met.
And it's been amazing to me to just know so much about other people's martial art and how their journey went, but also their philosophical viewpoint and so on and so forth. It's just been, I can't even say. It's like in one of the recent episodes we did on being a sensei, we talked about how Master Kligin used to call our technology gold.
Yes.
And that's how this feels. It feels like I'm getting golden nuggets that are just gems from all over the world. And I also love the ones where we learn, like when we learned about the history of swords or the history of axes, or one of my favorite all-time episodes is when we did the episode on Masutatsu Oyama.
Oh, someone that we had thought was going to be so different than the way it turned out after we had learned about it.
Exactly. He was so different. And I always thought that my internal karate journey would be a lot like somebody like Goji Yamaguchi, who looks the part. And no, I'm so incredibly close to Masutatsu Oyama, and that he is a crazy son of a gun. And I'm a little bit of a crazy son of a gun. Not nearly as crazy as he is.
That's true. Okay. We're almost time to say goodbye, but do you have a favorite memory that you'd like to share with us, either teaching or podcasting or just being a student or anything about your karate life?
Okay, before I start this, I'm going to give a huge shout out to Sensei Jackie and to Landon. When we very first started, we thought that our roles were going to be really tightly understood and we were going to stay within these patterns, but that didn't come out true at all. We all just kick in anytime we can, any way we can. Jackie has come up with scripts. Landon has come up with guests. Everybody works so hard at this. So that's one thing that I need to get said before I do anything else. Secondly, all my adult life, I've been a karate person. So one moment should stand out, but it doesn't. It's just a collage of really, really, really fantastic things. At one point, Sensei Jackie and I and a few other people came with us over the years, would go to what I would call an assisted living facility, and we would bring karate to them. Okay, the karate wasn't really what we were bringing, was it? It was the joy of friendship. Mm-hmm. It was entertainment, which we are. It was even more entertaining when you're there, Landon. And I think you came there with us a few times.
I did, us.
When you weren't in school.
Us.
And it was more of an emotional, uplifting moment for everybody, mm-hmm. for them and for us. So any symbiotic time I spend in karate makes me just so joyful. When I know that what I'm doing and what the other person is doing, we're working together, whether I'm in student mode or whether I'm in teacher mode. And sometimes they mix, yes, they do, all over the place. I guess it's probably an okay idea to tell the story here that when I was a pretty beginning black belt, Master Collegian started doing sword work with us because he wanted to do it and we were all he had. So we're probably knee-ons at the time. And he's got a room full of super talented people. Oh my gosh, would you like me to name some of them?
Yes.
Okay, Master Nick Brown, Master Robert Lasorsa, Sensei Rob Carbone, Sensei Steve Suriaco, and me are in a room. Yeah, it sounds like the beginning of a joke, doesn't it?
That's one heck of a group.
Exactly. And so Master Collegian's teaching simple draws and the simple first katas. And I am telling you, 2 years passed and he never once gave me a correction. Now, anybody in karate knows that corrections are the highest compliment.
That's correct.
And I knew it. And here I was with these people that were just dripping with talent and me. I was like, oh my gosh. So 2 years passed. And at the end of one of the classes, Master Collegian walks up to me and he goes, you know, Michelle, you're not that bad anymore. And from then on in, he would talk to me and help me and give me corrections. Up until then, I just copied what he said to the other people.
That's awesome.
I know. Can you imagine?
You know, I want to thank you, Sensei Michelle, for doing this. I know you were uncomfortable. And I think it was so important, or it is so important, for our listeners to know you. And from now on, if they want to ask you some questions, they can do that. Linda, how could they ask your questions?
You can contact Sensei Michelle and us all over the web at Wildcat Dojo. Send an email at dojoconversations@aol.com or find us on Instagram at Wildcat Dojo Conversations. I would like to second what Sensei Jackie said and give a huge thank you to Sensei for all of her hard work over the past many years putting this together. I did the math, and with an average of 24-minute podcasts, we have had almost 5,000 minutes of podcasts. Think about that.
Really?
So that's a lot of editing. That's a lot of post-production. So, and a lot of work to get that all together. So a big thank you to Sensei for all that she's done.
Okay. First off, thank you both very, very much for thinking of me. And I am uncomfortable talking about myself, which is funny because I'm not uncomfortable telling stories when I'm in the midst of the situation in the dojo. But that's a totally different situation, right?
Totally.
Yes.
Secondly, I want to do a shout out to the audience and say, wouldn't you like to have this kind of an episode about Landon and Sensei Jackie? I'm just saying, tell me, because I can make this happen. And won't
She's
it
trying
be
to
fun?
Turn the uncomfortable train around.
I think it's a really great idea because the whole time I was talking, I was thinking, I know this about Sensei Jackie. It's so interesting. And for you can't even begin to think how interesting Landon's life is.
Oh my gosh.
So that's something that interests you. You holler out to me and I'll make it happen because I want to. But I am not going to start the ads and the goodbyes today because this podcast was not my idea. So I'm letting them be.
You're just in the hot seat.
It's freaking me out a little bit.
Sensei Jackie, could they buy martial arts material at a place called Honor Athletics?
Of course. Of course. That would be a great place to buy it. You know, the easiest way is just to scroll down in the show notes and click on the link. That's the way I would do it. How would you do it?
I like to call. You can give them a call at 770-945-5150.
And before we jump out, can I say we do have this new link down at the bottom of the podcast. And it literally says support the show. And any support is so appreciated at any time, whether it's just one simple dollar or whatever. I want to thank you just for thinking of it because, you know, every little bit helps, right?
Sure does.
Okay, absolutely. That's my shameless plug.
On that very happy note, and on this great day of interviewing our sensei, I'm going to start the goodbyes then. Bye, everybody. See you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening, guys. I'm signing us out.
Thanks for being here. Hope you join us again next week on Wildcat Dojo Conversations.